persistent rain will ease off to a scattering of showers by afternoon and 11 degrees in Belfast. In Scotland, well, northern Scotland will see sunny spells and showers. Elsewhere, some wind and some rain.
Never boring, is it, Jay? Thank you very much. Well, now we continue our book of the week. Professor Dave Goulson has always been obsessed with wildlife, from his childhood collection of exotic pets to his unsuccessful experiments with taxidermy. In his new book, he explores the fascinating life cycle of bumblebees, the minutiae of what goes on in their nests and their relationship with predators. After some early disasters trying to resuscitate sick bees, he begins learning more about them. Tim McInerney reads A Sting in the Tail.
As I got older, I became much better at rescuing forlorn bumblebees. Sometimes I would see bumblebees, particularly queen bees in spring, walking slowly along the ground. I found that if I put my hand near them, they would feebly raise a middle leg, the defence posture of the tired bee. It was then possible gently to coax them up onto my hand. They never stung. I found that they would readily sip a mixture of honey and water in a teaspoon, and that after half an hour or so, they would often revive and fly away. It was a few years before I came to understand exactly what was going on here. Flying bumblebees have a body temperature that is generally well above that of the air around them, and tends to be constant at about 35 degrees centigrade. A rudimentary grasp of physics suggests that this is quite extraordinary. Keeping warm is harder the smaller you are. Big animals, such as blue whales, have a small surface relative to their volume, and so they cool very slowly. Small creatures, such as flies, have a huge surface area relative to their volume and lose heat incredibly quickly. Yet bumblebees, which in the grand scheme of things are rather closer to flies than to blue whales, can keep themselves warm even when the surrounding air is 30 degrees centigrade cooler than their body temperature. A phenomenal feat. Bumblebees which live in particularly cold climes have long fur, hence the huge size and long shaggy coat of the world's largest bumblebee, Bombus dalbomi, which inhabits the high Andes of South America. The vital thing for a bumblebee is to keep its thorax warm, because this is where the flight muscles are. Heat is generated by the contractions of the flight muscles. In flight, a bumblebee flaps its wings 200 times per second, roughly equivalent to the speed of a high-revving motorbike engine. This generates a lot of heat, but of course comes at a cost. Bumblebee flight is enormously expensive in terms of the energy that it uses. I was once looking for the kindest way to dispose of a colony of Turkish buff-tailed bumblebees, which I couldn't release into the wild because of the risk of infection to our native species. I decided that freezing them was probably the best option. I placed the nest in a domestic freezer at minus 30 degrees centigrade. The next day, I came back to find the colony buzzing loudly. The workers had gathered into a tight clump over the brood and were presumably shivering at maximum capacity. The queen was hidden in their center and seemed quite unperturbed. One of the great difficulties in studying bumblebees is finding their nests. They can be in all sorts of odd places, many of them tucked underground in old rodent burrows, in hedge bottoms, or amongst the roots of a tree. Others prefer compost heaps, bramble thickets, lofts, rockeries, holes in trees, and tit boxes. It has long been known that one animal has no trouble in finding bumblebee nests, the badger. Badgers are voracious predators, digging up and consuming everything that they find. Bees, grubs, wax, honey, the lot. They are also nocturnal. They have poor eyesight and clearly find the bumblebee nests by smell. In fact, the nests are especially smelly, at least when reared in captivity. You can create a similar odour by pouring black treacle and sherry over a pair of dirty running socks, sealing them into a Tupperware box, and then leaving it in a warm place for a month. So the solution to finding bumblebees' nests may well be a pet sniffer badger. However, badgers do not domesticate well, remaining grumpy and rather dangerous. But if not a sniffer badger, how about a sniffer dog? Dogs are well known for their incredibly sensitive noses. After all, once trained, they can smell out drugs, explosives, and even cancer in humans. If they can manage all that, then surely they can sniff out a highly odoriferous bumblebee nest. The Defence Animal Centre in Leicestershire trains all the army dogs used to detect explosives in Iraq and Afghanistan. I must admit that I felt a bit of a fool when I rang. I fully expected them to laugh or put the phone down, thinking my call was a hoax. To my surprise, and their immense credit, the staff were immediately interested. I think perhaps they were a little bit bored with training dogs to do the same thing time after time, and they fancied a challenge. So I drove up from Southampton on a rainy day in November. I met Dutch, a senior dog trainer, who took me for a demonstration. At a large semi-derelict army building, Dutch opened the back of his Land Rover and out bounded a very excited black Labrador called Miffy, eager to get to work. I held the dog's lead while Dutch entered the building and hid an object. Then he gave Miffy the command to start work. She dashed around, her tail wagging crazily, jumping on furniture, crawling under cupboards, poking into every nook and cranny, and snorting when she got dust up her nose. After about 2 minutes, her seemingly random searching brought her to a small cupboard set against a wall, at which point she dropped to the ground, her whole body quivering with excitement, nose to the cupboard, her tail a rigid point behind her. Dutch opened the cupboard, and there inside was a tiny, pea-sized piece of cocaine wrapped in cling film. All most impressive. We had brought with us an old frozen bumblebee nest in an icebox for Dutch to use as training material. It really was quite smelly, and he agreed that it ought to be easy enough to train a dog to find it. It was around this time I first met Steph O'Connor. Soon after she started work as a temporary research technician, it became apparent that Steph would be a perfect handler for a new sniffer dog. If ever there were some kind of global catastrophe, Steph will undoubtedly be among the survivors. Her idea of a perfect weekend is to go rabbiting with her three pet ferrets, or out in the woods shooting pigeons, or making homemade wine out of unpromising root vegetables. On one occasion, she came into work with a packed lunch of squirrel casserole. At the time, her skinning skills were not great, and she had to spit out clumps of fur as she ate. The DAC found a suitable dog, a Springer Spaniel named Toby. By the spring of 2008, the two were ready for action. Toby's sniffing abilities are quite phenomenal. If he is making an appearance in a school, we post them a few strands of moss from a bumblebee nest to hide them somewhere in the school grounds. To the kids' delight, Toby dashes around excitedly, invariably finding the nest material within minutes. Frustratingly, however, Toby was nowhere near as good at finding real live wild bumblebee nests as he was at the bits of nests that we hid. Although he found some, he scampered right past others. So using sniffer dogs to find bumblebee nests is still at the research stage. Most bumblebees are attractively coloured, with bright bands of yellow and red or white bottoms. This is for a reason. They have a sting, or at least the females do, and they use it to defend the nest against invaders. Bumblebees are generally good-natured creatures and almost never use their sting when away from the nest, preferring to fly away if disturbed when foraging. Bufftails and tree bumblebees are a little more feisty, and their nests are best left alone. When really riled, they will bite and jab with their sting at the same time, and are not easily deterred. I hate to admit this, but on more than one occasion I have accidentally pulled the head off a bee when trying to remove one which had fastened its jaws onto my clothing. It is a common misconception that bees die after they sting. This applies only to honeybees, which have strongly barbed stings which lodge in the flesh of their victim. The bee cannot then escape, and so continues to pump venom until it is swatted. On the other hand, the stings of bumblebees are not barbed, so they do not get stuck in their victim. Male bumblebees have no sting. If caught, male bumblebees jab their bottom at their attacker as if trying to sting, presumably in a last-ditch bluff. In fact, the males of most species are fairly easy to distinguish to the human eye, particularly since many have tufts of yellow hair on their faces. Not so long ago, I was of the opinion that bumblebees had a pretty easy time, there seemingly being rather few predators able to attack them. Or so I thought until July 2008, when I received a letter from Anne-Marie Smout, a keen naturalist. She had just come back from holiday in Denmark, where they had been staying with friends. The friend's garden had some large lime trees. Buff-tailed and white-tailed bumblebees love the flowers of lime trees. One morning, when having breakfast on the lawn, Anne-Marie noticed dead bumblebees under the trees. On closer inspection, she found that each had been attacked in the same way. The back of the head had been opened up and the brain scooped out. The abdomen had also been opened and hollowed out. Intrigued and slightly horrified, Anne-Marie set out to discover the culprit by hiding out of sight and watching the tree with binoculars. After a few minutes, a whole family of great tits emerged, and they continued their banquet. In 2010 and 2011, Steph filmed 36 bumblebee nests. It turned out that the most common visitors were mice, voles, and shrews. Charles Darwin was interested in the relationship between mice and bumblebee numbers. In his most famous publication, On the Origin of Species, he suggested that red clover pollination, which is exclusively carried out by bumblebees, was better in the vicinity of villages, for villages have cats, and cats eat field mice, which would otherwise eat the bumblebees. Thomas Huxley, a great friend of Darwin, took this apparent logic even further by arguing that the power of the British Navy was attributable to spinsters, who keep cats, which eat mice, which therefore don't eat bumblebees, enabling the bumblebees to pollinate clover, which is fed to cattle, from which salted beef was derived, which was the staple food of the British Navy. Perhaps Steph's most exciting discovery was that great tits do not confine themselves to plucking bumblebees from flowering trees. A number of her nests were regularly visited by great tits, which would sit by the entrance, picking off foragers as they came and went, and returning day after day. One of the major bumblebee nest predators is the bumblebee wax moth, a small, nondescript, cream-coloured moth that lays batches of eggs in bumblebee nests. When the eggs hatch, the caterpillars spin tough, silken tubes which protect them from the bees and tunnel through the nest, indiscriminately consuming wax, pollen, grubs and pupae. In heavy infestations, the nest is completely destroyed, the bees seemingly unable to do anything to fight back. Usually, there are lots of other insects in old bumblebee nests. Volucella bombulans, for instance, is a beautiful, large, furry hoverfly which mimics bumblebees. The beetle Antherophagus nigricornis finds its way into bumblebee nests by climbing onto a flower. It waits there for a bumblebee to arrive, then grabs hold with its mandibles. Once she returns to her nest, the beetle drops off and thereafter resides within the nest. Bumblebee nests also contain a multitude of tiny mites. Mites cannot fly at any stage of their life, so that any remaining after the bees have left the nest will soon starve. To solve this problem, some mites cling on to new queens before they leave their natal nest and then hibernate with them, hoping to colonize the new nest in the spring. They look revolting, but most do not actually feed on the bee. They're just hitching a lift. Overall, bumblebee nests support a vast diversity of fascinating and sometimes rather stomach-churning creatures, many of which have been little studied. Clearly, the importance of bumblebees in supporting biodiversity goes far beyond their role as pollinators of wild flowers.
Episode 3 of A Sting in the Tail by Dave Gawson was read by Tim McInerney. It was abridged by Libby Spurrier and produced by Joanna Green and was a peer production for BBC Radio 4. BBC Radio 4, now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office. On behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015, today Thursday the 9th of May. There are warnings of gales in Thames, Dover, White, Portland, Plymouth, Fitzroy, Sole, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Malin and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low, South Rockall 985, expected Irish Sea 989 by 1800 Thursday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking, north at 0, south at 0, 40s, Cromartie 4th. Southerly or southeasterly 4 or 5, occasionally 6 later in 40s and 4th. Rain or showers, fog patches, moderate or good, occasionally very poor. Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight. Mainly south, 3 or 4, increasing 5 or 6, occasionally 7 at first. Correction, occasionally 7 later, except in Fisher.